Welcome to the Fairbanks, Alaska Real Estate Radio Podcast. Welcome to the Fairbanks, Alaska Real Estate Radio Podcast. This is episode number 2. I have to apologize for the long delay. There was, I did one whole episode of number 2 that I did without recording, which was super awesome. And then, there was that. That actually was going to be all about why you should use a realtor instead of for sale by owner kind of thing. Or, the pros and cons of realtor and for sale by owner. I was kind of put off by that fact that I did that. We went on vacation. We went to Washington and Oregon, took Joey. He's 3 years old. He just turned 3 years old. So we took him on a tour of Washington and Oregon, basically seeing all of his relatives and grandparents so he could have birthday parties all over the place. So he's birthdayed out. So that was good, but that was like 2.5 weeks of doing that. So now it's time to get back to the podcast. The topic for this week is duplexes and investment properties, multifamily types of properties. So I'm a big proponent of those. We own six duplexes, and we also have a little house that's a rental too. We like duplexes a lot. Our first house was a fourplex, and the reason we ended up buying that, I wasn't even in real estate when we did that. We bought as a first house a fourplex, and when you go to get financing, you can buy a house. You can get like regular residential financing for everything up to a fourplex. So duplex, triplex, fourplex, single family house, all under the same kind of loan. Fannie Mae or Fannie Mae conventional, which is 5% down, or FHA, which is 3.5% down. So that's great. I mean, you can get in there and you can, in our case, our rents more than covered the mortgage, which was terrific. So that fourplex really helped out. We were able to save up money. When we sold it, we made a bunch of money. And we used the money that we made when we sold that fourplex to buy duplexes. So we bought, I think, three duplexes with that money, and we paid off our cars, got a plasma TV, which, we don't have that TV anymore, but, and paid off student loans. So that fourplex was a great investment. So I wanted to talk about duplexes too. So duplexes are having a hard time in the Fairbanks market right now. They're not selling very well. And I don't know why. I guess as an investor, they don't make a whole lot of money, because the more units you have, the more money you make, because, your fuel bills are not, proportionally higher for a duplex per unit than what it would be for a higher amount of apartments. But if you are an owner occupant, if you are buying a house to live in, if you have any inclination at all, for business kinds of things for people and how they're going to be, I would really consider buying a duplex. Now is a great time to buy a duplex. They're cheap. They're not selling very well. You're not going to have any competition. You can get a pretty good deal on them, and you get somebody that's going to be paying a huge portion of your mortgage payment for you with their rents. The downside of duplexes is most of them don't have two heating systems, so you gotta pay for the heating oil yourself. Which is not, that part of it's not great. But you know, you'd be, if you just bought a single family house, you'd be paying for the oil yourself too. But now you've got somebody paying you a bunch of rent money. So that's one thing, you know. And also with a fourplex or higher, you're not going to see, or you're rarely going to see bigger apartments. So they might be one-bedroom apartments or two-bedroom apartments in a fourplex or a fiveplex. But in a duplex, more often you'll see like three- and four-bedroom apartments. So those are nicer. You get tenants that tend to stay longer. Sometimes you can become friends with them. We've always had neighbors that we've lived next to, and often we've become friends with the tenants, you know, that they live next to us, and they'll, you know, watch things for us while we're gone and stuff like that. We've always been kind of partial to duplexes. The idea now of buying a single family house without somebody helping to pay our mortgage is a little scary for us. When we first bought that fourplex, my dad was really into this idea of the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it talked about good debt versus bad debt. You know, good debt is debt that's leveraged against rents, right? So you've got people paying your mortgage payments for you. That's good debt because you're not, because it's, you know, it's covered by somebody else. So you're paying off your mortgages using someone else's money. With six duplexes in a little house, we're almost $2 million in debt, right? But it's good debt because it's being paid. Bad debt is stuff like credit cards and student loans and things like that. You know, student loan is supposed to be an investment. I don't know. Maybe sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes they're hard to pay off. But yeah, anyway, so when I first got into real estate, I used to be an English teacher, high school and junior high English. And then when my position was taken away, basically, it's not even like I was let go. It was just they didn't have enough budget for an English teacher in my school anymore. So after I left, they had like history and math teachers teaching the English class, which I don't know, you know, whatever. But I was thinking, what can I do with an English degree at this point? I don't know. We relocated to Fairbanks because Jennifer got a job. She's a mental health counselor. So we relocated to Fairbanks and I got a job as a grant writer for a nonprofit housing place, Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing. They do low income loans and grants for people to help them buy houses, you know, income qualifying people. So we did that. I was doing that grant writing, and then the loan officers, you know, had some issues with the boss, and they all left, and I ended up becoming a loan officer for a while. I was the only one. I kind of started learning about how financing works and about real estate. And so that got me thinking, maybe I want, you know, we bought the fourplex, and that got me thinking, hey, property management's not too bad. If I can get a bunch of these, maybe I won't have to work anymore. You know, I could just do property management of my own properties for a living. And so I thought, well, and then I had thought maybe I could do management for other people. I thought, well, maybe I better get a real estate license. So I got a real estate license and kind of figured out that what I figured out from that is that you cannot make a living just hanging your license somewhere. I mean, if you do property management full time, you could do pretty well at that. And there are people that do, for sure. But for me, the expense of being a realtor and stuff, I needed to start selling real estate. So that's what I, you know, this was 11 years ago. That's when I got into real estate sales, and I've been doing it ever since. Kind of, we've slowed down on buying investment properties now just because of the cost of heating oil. Cause there's, you know, $4 a gallon. We'll pay from $20,000 to $30,000 just for heating oil in a year. So, and a lot of that is not covered by the rent. So yeah, but anyway, I still believe that, as a single family house, you know, a duplex is a good way to go and something people might want to consider. You know, if you're frugally minded, or, you know, you don't want to have a huge mortgage payment. Maybe you don't want to pay $2,000 a month or whatever. You know, and then you've got a tenant helping you make that payment for you. So that's kind of my thought on that. Also in this episode, we'll be talking to Ray Brazier at RE/MAX, who is specializes in investors and investment properties. I mean, he does all kinds of real estate like we all do, but his license plate says investor. He personally owns a lot of rental properties, way more than I do. So he's definitely an expert on that. So Ray Brazier is here. I started RE/MAX in 2005. So I've been here, or 2004. So I've been here 10 years in July, and you were here a lot longer than that. I mean,
yeah, this October will be 17 years, I think.
Jeez, wow.
I started in 97. And I came over. I came over the October of 98, so yeah, is that coming up on? Yeah,
wow, was that when Pam was broker or Marjolaine?
Okay.
So you have you been into investment properties that whole time?
Yeah, actually, I started investing in real estate. I bought my very first income property in 1994.
Oh, okay.
So I had been in buying investment properties before I was ever a realtor.
Me too. Actually, that was my dad gave me the Rich Dad Poor Dad book.
Mm-hmm.
Told me I needed to start. We were just starting to shop for houses, and he said what we should do for our first house is buy a fourplex. And of course, he had one to sell to us. Yeah, yeah. So we were shopping for fourplexes, and they were really hot on the market then. I mean, we lost out on a couple of them, you know, getting outbid and stuff.
Yeah, the market was that would have been probably what, around about 06,
05. Yeah.
It was certainly a totally different market back then.
Or no, 03. It was 03 because I hadn't started in real estate yet. But yeah, that was why I got into real estate, was because I was excited about investing, and I thought about going into property management as a business, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, I should hang my license somewhere. So, but then once you get into it, you kind of realize you can't just hang a license. I mean, you need to make a living at it.
Right.
Yeah.
it's really not a business you can do part-time.
No. So have you read that book also?
I have. The book that got me started in investing was, I bought my very first house in 1990, back in the early 90s, the real estate guru that used to come around town was Charles Gibbons' program, and so that was actually, I had bought some seminar information and went to seminars on with them, and so... We started studying it from that aspect of it there, and then I'm pretty sure it was 94, it may have been 93 when I got my very first investment property, but it was back there a ways. But yeah, that's what's got me started. And then I've read almost all of Robert Kiyosaki's books. I even have his board game Cashflow 101 and 102. I have it also in electronic version too. So,
and I remember it seemed like the Rich Dad Poor Dad was all about trading up. So like you get a duplex or whatever, and then you get a couple of those, and then you refinance that, or you sell one of them to buy a fourplex, and you put all that together and buy an apartment complex. Or
it's a lot of the using your equity to leverage forward into another piece of property,
and making sure that your debt is all good debt, so that your tenants are paying your mortgage for you, basically. So I've been thinking about with duplexes lately. There's been hardly any movement on them at all. I mean, they're not selling. They haven't been selling like they should. And I think if I was a buyer and I was going to be owner occupying, now would be a perfect time to buy a duplex.
Yeah, I've always, in my opinion, duplexes have never really been investment properties. But what they really are is an owner occupant subsubsidy program.
They will.
If a person's living in there, they will generate enough income typically from a 2 or 3 bedroom unit to come close to paying their mortgage. And really, out of what they're out there, the utility costs in living in the house. Where duplexes become kind of a disadvantage from regular income properties is if you were to move out and have it both sides being rented. It's really hard to actually generate a positive income. It's really hard to...
Unless they're paying the heat for you.
Right, unless they're paying the heat for you.
Which most of them don't have two boilers or furnaces. So, like mine, are all I pay the heat on all of mine. Yeah. And that's been difficult.
Yeah, one vacancy pretty much will wipe out the whole year's profit really quick.
I suppose that's true.
The duplexes, though, even if you just bought one and even had the building basically by itself, in the end, it's still not entirely bad. It just doesn't generate a whole lot, if any, positive monthly cash flow.
Yeah, and a part of what I sort of came to grips with is that I was, I'd always thought, well, we're making like 6% per year in equity, so... Mm-hmm. Even if I wasn't making a lot of cash flow or any, at least there was always that. Yeah. But in these last few years, that's not been the case.
No, it's been, it's been tough with the fuel prices up there at what they've been at. And of course, the vacancies have been a little bit heavier the past 2 years with the, the military shuffling around and stuff like that.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, do you have duplexes also?
I do. I mean, I've got two duplexes over in Aurora. I bought them years ago. Got them at a really good buy. I mean, I paid less than $100,000 a piece.
Wow!
So, I mean, they're kind of the exception to the rule because I bought them cheap enough
that they still do. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it seems like. At the time that I was buying a lot of the duplexes from then until like maybe 2006 or 2007 was the time that all the people who bought their properties during the pipeline were just starting to sell theirs. It was kind of the perfect time for them because they were making a lot of money selling off their...
Yeah, a lot of them had been waited for that recovery from the crash of the late 80s.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're looking at possibly the gas pipeline coming in too. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see a boom coming from that?
I do. I think if we really do partner up with the as a state, partner up as an ownership of that pipeline, and help become a financial partner on it, I think that'll get it where it's got to a point where it'll be viable for them. And I think the amount of jobs that would create, we would have ourselves a pretty good boom for a couple of years, probably about 3 or 4 years. And then I think there'd be a lot of long-term economic benefits from it, too. We'd have reduced cost in heating.
Oh, gosh, yeah, we really need that.
Exactly. And, we'd see a reduced cost in our electricity, and really we would actually see... first-time home buyers actually truly being able to afford a house, because a lot of times in the dead of winter, those utility costs, those mortgage, the heat costs exceed their mortgage.
And banks don't qualify people based on what the heating bills are going to be.
Unless they're buying condos.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's always that weird catch about those.
So I think if it does, and I think it's, got our best shot in my lifetime now of happening, I think there's going to be a huge economic boom to us all the way around.
Yeah, and my dad sold most of his properties already, probably at the wrong time. Seems that way.
Well, it's sometimes hard to figure out when the best time is.
And it's hard to hold on when you're trying to do something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, too. We're just trying to hold on to ours, because it would be a mistake, I think, to try to sell our duplexes right now.
Yeah, that pipeline comes through. We're going to see an increase in rents. We're going to see an increase in property values. And we're going to see a huge increase in jobs.
I've heard a rumor that there were like 300 people that went up north to work on something, some sort of preliminary work on the pipeline.
I hadn't heard that, but I do know, one of my clients right now owns a business that has the man camps,
mm-hmm.
as well as a trucking business, and they are just extremely busy right now.
Really?
Yeah. And then one of my other clients right now, or two of my other clients, are both truckers, and literally they're getting as much time driving north as they want.
Wow.
So, you know.
So they're doing a lot of setting up and logistics and things.
There is, and there's certainly some political debates right now over tax reforms,
right,
and things,
right,
like that, and it's, you know, whether you're on one side or the other, I think everybody can agree we need more oil working through the pipeline. And
yeah, and we need the gas pipeline for sure.
Correct.
So then the debate is about whether, how much of a tax break do we give the oil companies? And on one side, it's like, well, if you tax them too much, they may just go somewhere else. Or on the other side, they think that it's, you know, they're big corporate bullies and they're taking advantage of us.
Well, when the previous tax, the progressive tax law was in effect. Is it still recording?
Yeah, our power just went out.
Out of power. In the previous tax, the progressive one there, the higher tax went up, the more they got taxed, and so it just, well, there was no incentive for them. So
really,
we need to get more oil in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a half million gallon barrels a day is a waste of a resource when it can handle 2 million barrels a day.
Oh wow! Yeah. So the oil is still up there. They just are restricting the flow because they're not making as much money on it,
correct,
as they would like.
Yeah. You know, and you know, when you own a business, you're in the business to make money.
Yeah.
So it's not a subsidy.
Yeah. Well, and I'm for anything that keeps, you know, gets Fairbanks going.
Exactly. You know, anything that's a positive growth, we should always be supporting. So.
Yeah. And it'll be, so what you earlier you had said, you think that the electrical rates will go down if we get natural gas?
If you actually look at your electric bill right now, we have that oil surcharge.
Yeah, because they burn oil to make electricity.
And that surcharge is actually higher than your real bill. And so, you know, really when you look at the electric bill right now, we're really paying the equivalent of 25 cents a kilowatt. And, you know, I've seen reports putting us the second or third highest city in the United States as far as a developed city.
For electric rates?
For electric
rates. I didn't know there was anybody higher than us.
Well, I've heard, you know, there's some Hawaii areas could be higher than us, so.
but they don't need electricity that much.
No, but still, it's extremely high, and, you know, and if you look at all your bills, even our water, our city utility bills, all of a sudden start kicking in surcharges,
mm-hmm.
and everybody, you know, they've added it in all the way along,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, if you've owned rental properties for a while, you've seen it, and rents haven't been able to go up near as high as the utility costs.
Every time I try to raise the rents in between tenants, it'll sit there for a month and a half, and I have to lower it back down again, or else, because I just wasted a whole bunch of money trying to get more rent than I could get.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I was looking at a 13-plex that I had bought back in 1999, and I was looking at my HUD settlement statement, and I had to buy the 1,000 gallons of fuel in the tank. So, what would you guess 1999 the price of fuel was?
Like $1 something, $1.10 maybe.
79 cents a gallon.
Oh, geez.
I had to reimburse them for the tank, the fuel in the tank.
Wow.
So that's in essence, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
We've seen a fourfold, almost a fivefold increase in just that one utility expense alone.
But our incomes haven't gone up.
Their rents have only gone up, you know, 20 or 30% at most.
Yeah.
And it's not to get more money in our pocket, is actually we're trying to reduce the loss that we've been covering.
Yeah, so. And just trying to maintain until a better time comes along. Yeah.
And I do think that's one of the reasons that has helped push down the valuations a bit on those duplexes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a...
And wasn't there, was it Sarah Palin had done at one time that fuel subsidy, or there was like the energy subsidy that she had put into the permanent fund check.
Correct. Correct. Yep.
But no one's ever taken that up again, or it's just kind of a one-time thing.
Yeah, I haven't heard.
But we didn't get it per property. It was per person.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
If it was per tenant, it would have been really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And some tenants do pay for their fuel, but... I have a hard time. I mean, I have one house that I could charge the fuel to the tenants, but it takes me so long to find somebody that I just give up and pay for it myself.
I know you and I had that conversation this winter when I had a few of my houses really lagging on.
Yeah.
And houses that I've owned some of those 15 years that when I go vacant, it's, you know, 3 weeks vacant is a long time.
Yeah.
And that really wasn't the case this winter. Some of those houses set vacant over 2 months. One of them I ended up covering the fuel on and just increasing the rent.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, I don't think it was quite a direct increase of what the true cost would be. But
yeah. And I've heard from military people coming in like, so-and-so warned me not to rent a place where you have to pay for your own heating because the heating is so expensive here.
Yeah, and I think you had mentioned that to me before, that they were kind of getting coached on that from the military side.
Yeah, or maybe just friends. I mean, probably not anything official, but...
Yeah, well, we all like it or have low rent and fuel included, but...
It's yeah.
Just, you know, yeah, you start including fuel, and all of a sudden a three-bedroom house is approaching $2,000 a month in rent.
Yeah.
And really... That same house would rent for $1,600 to $1,700 without it, so it's not exactly doesn't exactly offset the true expense.
Yeah, well, and there are some places that where the rent is that high.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any that are that high. I think the highest ones I have are $1,850.
I've got the one right now. I've got a 1925.
Does it take a while to find people for that?
Well, this particular one, it was a Section 8 one, and so we kind of rolled it in the fuel.
Oh, okay. So,
but yeah, when you start renting anything above, if people would be looking for three bedrooms around that 14 and 15 range right now, so if you're kicking in fuel and they see a higher number, they're not usually even calling you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I always advertise at the top of my things, you know, owner pays for heat, just because, well, that, so there's that, and then there's pets. That's the other thing that so many landlords don't allow pets that, it, you know, I cave and I allow them because, all of those people that can't find a place, you know, now I can find somebody to rent my places.
Yeah, I don't allow pets of any kind in my multiplexes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, because they're there's no yard or anything for
them.
Well,
it's not only that. You know, you get one dog barking, then you got four dogs barking.
And
nobody takes responsibility for cleaning it up. It's always, well, that my animal didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so I've acquired buildings with the multiplexes that had pets on it, and as soon as the leases come up, they're
not allowed anymore.
They're not allowed.
Yeah.
And you know, some of my houses, I will allow pets in them, and it's pets on approval because some dogs aren't permitted by insurance companies, so you got to be careful about that.
Yeah.
And I would always say smokers for outside.
Yeah.
Outside smoking.
Yeah, me too. Okay. All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers it.
Well, I appreciate you giving me a holler.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for coming on.
You can find us on the web at www.fairbanksrealestateradio.com. This podcast is on iTunes, or at least I'm trying to get it on iTunes. Right now they just have a place for it, but the episodes haven't been showing up there for some reason. If you want to send me an email, it's ryandanhauser@mac.com. Thank you.